The season's greetings, America. This is Ben Grauer speaking. These are the actual voices of people in a little Kansas town, blending in the words of a Swedish hymn as they told the story of how their farm community on the edge of the great American prairie bound itself in spirit and substance with a similar town, a half continent and an ocean away. A story truly befitting the Christmas season. A story of what 250 people did to help bring peace on earth, goodwill toward men.
Living 1950, in cooperation with the 20th Century Fund, presents the third in a special series of programs entitled The People Act, designed to penetrate America to its grassroots and discover the characteristic and democratic ways in which American citizens unite to solve some of their everyday problems. This story was assembled and transcribed by NBC Special Program Unit, Living 1950. Listen now to A Prairie Noel. Ladies and gentlemen, your field reporter, Elmore McKee.
How do you do? Our story today is set in Morganville, Kansas. In truth, Main Street, America. And it is more than a story of democracy in action. It shows us how, in this modern complex world, we are all dependent upon one another for survival. We took our recording machine to Morganville and asked the people there to tell their story themselves. For that story, we return you to your narrator, Ben Grauer.
It's harvest time in Kansas. The month is July, and the year, 48. Out in the fields that stretch level and unbroken to the horizon, the combines are busily reaping Morganville's harvest of wheat and oats. And in Morganville itself, old Lon Silver sits in the shade, looks out toward the fruitful fields, and remembers.
Well, in the old days, it was pretty wild here. The Indians were running up and down here, thousands of them. And as a kid, I was scared to death of them. And the minute I saw an Indian coming towards the house, I made a beeline for under the bed and got there and stayed there till they left. We had no roads. We had no railroads, transportation, mostly ox teams.
Lon Silver, dreaming in the shade. Dreaming of the days of 1860 when old Ebenezer Morgan, Yankee sea captain and the founder of this Kansas town, sought refuge here from rum whaling in the sea. And as old Lon Silver dozed and dreamed, those to whom Morganville belongs today, those in the fields reaping the wheat and oats, those in the kitchens preparing the night's supper, they thought other thoughts.
From the past war and before the war came, we tried isolation. Then we found that we weren't isolated, that they reached out and found us anyhow. So this time we thought that surely we could reach out to the world instead of waiting until they came to us.
That's Velma Carson, Morganville's most world-minded citizen. Listen as she recorded for us her account of their first groping efforts to reach out to the world.
We tried pen pals, but somehow or other the correspondences died. We tried sending out money and clothes, but we really had no contact because we didn't know whether they ever got there or not. We tried reading the papers, but they only filled us with despair. We tried being religious, but at every meeting of the youth fellowship or the young adults or the Sunday school, we thought that religion wasn't enough unless we did some one affirmative thing, and what that thing would be, we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
No, they didn't know until, in a nearby community, Morganville heard how a town in Minnesota adopted a town in Germany. And what did they think of that idea?
Well, it appealed to us. We came home and talked about it, but how to find such a town and how could we do it? We were only 250 people. And somebody said, you have addresses out in the world, why don't you write?
And they did write to an organization known as Operation Democracy, a clearinghouse, a friendship place where lonely cities can meet each other.
We wrote a timid letter, really, the first time, because we thought they might think we were too small to be of any use.
But in New York City, Genia Leif Todd thought otherwise. Executive Secretary of Operation Democracy, he recorded for us his immediate reply.
Dear Mrs. Carson, the countries with which we are working at the present time are France, Italy, Holland, Luxembourg, and in a few cases, Germany. Of these, the need is probably greatest in Italy and France.
Back in Morganville, the arrival of Leif Todd's letter from Operation Democracy was like a trumpet call for assembly. Swiftly, the word got around, and at twilight, they gathered on Velma Carson's porch. With her reporter's eye, Agnes Huff, editor of the Tribune, recalls that evening well.
The group there that night represented everything, every part of our community. The farmer, the minister, the school superintendent, high school pupils, businessmen and businesswomen.
Yes, and the music teacher was there, too. They were all there. And they recorded for us, in their own words, the story of that evening.
It was a lovely place for us to meet. Morganville had some nice shade trees, but along with the shade trees, dust came, and we had a wonderful crop of Kansas mosquitoes. While we talked, we worked into the discussion of what we could do to unite our town with the world, and what we could do to unite our own community, too.
From hand to hand, they passed around Leif Todd's letter.
In France, we would suggest two communities, both very small and located in Alsace-Lorraine. The town of Saulnes in 1940 had a population of 340 people. Now, the town of Fèves, near Metz, has a population around 300. In Holland, a tentative suggestion might be the village of Moerdijk.
There, in the dusk, on the porch, the people of Morganville, Kansas, sat and considered whom they would talk to a half-continent and an ocean away.
My family was in favor of adopting an Italian city. We were corresponding with an Italian family, and we liked this family very much.
We talked quite a bit about taking a Dutch town, but we decided that the Dutch people had always been very frugal, had always staged to come back, and that they could do it if any nation could.
Fèves was my selection because some of the destruction that was done by our boys, and I felt that the things could be more friendly if we chose Fèves, France.
They looked again to see what Leif Todd had said about Fèves.
It was badly damaged in 1940, and the Germans also did a thorough job of pilfering. This is a farming community, mainly cattle.
And that was us. We were cattle people. We'd know how to write that first letter of friendship, of how we drove the cattle home and milked, and the price of cattle. And we discussed it at great length of making a friend for life out across the ocean. And we thought a long time and talked a long time because we knew that when one town was chosen, the others would not be ours anymore.
Yes, they discussed it, debated it, prayed over it. But the hour was getting late, and finally, when the vote was counted, Morganville in Kansas discovered it had made a blind date with a town called Fèves in France. This, then, was it, that some one affirmative thing of which Velma Carson had spoken. They wanted to act at once.
Immediately, we intended to write letters to them, telling them all about us and how it was with us and where we were going and what we were doing and how we lived and how we sent our children to school and what a good world it is and how we wanted to be friends.
But then Morganville read the notes about Fev again.
To people whose children were starving when ours were well fed. We could hardly mention our herds when theirs were hungry for milk, when they were threatened with TB. You can't open a friendship on an equal basis when one group's children have food and the others don't. And suddenly we were stricken with the necessity of offering these children part of what we had.
They laughed, those people of Morganville, Kansas, if anyone called them statesmen, but no statesman could have gone more surely to the heart of the matter. If their sentiment was to mean anything, it must be backed up by substance shared. Such sharing would be bread upon the waters. But they needed money. The question, how to raise it?
What do you think, Velma? It seems to me that we should do something. We should have a blowout of some kind. What do you think? So Velma Carson said, well, I think so, too. So she said, what do you think we should have? I said, we have a nice little place down here that the NYA fixed for us. We've called it our amphitheater. Why don't we have something down there? Oh, we should have a pageant. You can do more things with that.
A pageant. What for a small town anywhere in America is more natural than a pageant? A pageant to raise money for Fev. But what kind of a pageant? About what? Featuring whom?
Velma Carson's mother gave us the real inspiration of what we could use. She said, why not use the history of Morganville?
Ah, there was an idea. As Mrs. Young just told us in her own words, use the story of the founder of the town, Ebenezer Morgan, who sought isolation to show his descendants discarding isolation. Bring in old Lon Silver's Indians. Take the various nationalities who have settled Morganville, the Swedes, the Swiss, the Norwegians, the Irish. Get the high school drama teacher to stage it, the music teacher to conduct the music. Call the pageant something like One World or None, and invite the whole countryside. Days, weeks go by. People scour their attics for the clothes they or their parents wore to come to America. Search out the dancing costumes of their children. Remove the Spanish shawls from their living room pianos.
We started out this pageant with the idea of using the people in Morganville, intending to have about 30 people. The thing grew, and finally we wound up with 150 people, and it was a community project.
Community project? Indeed it was. As silence settled over the throng gathered for the performance, as the pageant voice intones Mrs. Carson's narration, one after another of Morganville's citizens took the center of the stage. Listen to some of their roles as they described them for us.
I suggested that we should have a Swedish dance on the stage, and I called Anton Petersons, and they went and got a Swedish costume, and we had the dance.
Mrs. Wicklund carried a Swedish flag, and us four came hopping along back of her, and we did our Swedish dance.
I didn't dance. I just held the flag.
I represented the Swiss people, which is our nationality. And we done a folk dance, and of course we had our typical Swiss pipes, smoking and having just a jolly good time on the stage, and we did possibly look like a real Swiss couple.
I was dressed in a Chinese costume. My little daughter, Carol, was with me. She was in a Chinese costume, too. I sang Poor Butterfly in the pageant.
My husband, Harvey Oettinger, was one of the Cossacks who helped to draw in the boat on which the Russian dancer appeared on the scene. I was chairman of the ice cream committee.
I played the part of Buddha, and people were around me worshiping.
Four of us sang this number, Children of the Heavenly Father, in the Swedish language.
Yeah.
But the scene Velma Carson liked best was the closing scene.
On the left was the classic Angela scene of the French peasant with his wife by their empty wheelbarrow. On the right, we had a similar scene with Kansas actors, and the Morganville wheelbarrow was filled to heaping with tomatoes and other fruits, and the yellow wheat field stretched out behind, while an Angelus bell rang in the distance.
Morganville's pageant was a rousing success. $1,000 worth of success. Dan Ranney, treasurer of the pageant fund, put fountain pen to paper.
At that time, I wrote Mr. Terlotting, the school teacher of Fevs, what the people needed mostly. He replied that they could use rice, which they had not seen since 1940, sugar for the preservation of their foods, cereals and powdered milk for the children. We got busy right away.
Yes, along with plowing and milking and doing of chores, Morganville kept busy indeed for the little town in France.
After our pageant, Velma Carson came and asked me if we could work out a ration of powdered milk for the 60 children in Fevres. We worked out this ration and had the milk sent to the children in Fevres.
We started to collect outing and old blankets and things, and made over 100 diapers for the children there, for the babies, rather.
Well, we found out some time ago that we could ship seeds to these people, quite a variety of vegetable seeds. We organized a committee, and I was appointed as chairman of the seed committee.
There it is, in the voices of the people who did it. That's how it went with Morganville and Fevres. Friends who had never met except in letters, and clothes and diapers and powdered milk. Two towns linked in a common interest, yet half a world apart. Until the following summer.
I took a farmer's friendship tour to Europe, and when we got to Nancy, France, I left Mature, taking a train to Metz, where I'd taken a taxicab to the little city of Fevres, which Morganville adopted.
Farmer August Kohling, junketing in Europe, became the first citizen of Morganville actually to clasp hands with the newfound friends of Fevres.
I offered some money when I were there, and they wouldn't take it. They didn't feel like they wanted to take the money from me at all.
August Kohling visited a farm, and finding a tractor sitting useless without tracks, he offered to help pay for the tracks.
But this farmer says, no, I have money enough to pay for these tracks, but I can't have them until the United States buys more goods from France. That's what my government says. We need more dollars here badly.
For August Kohling, this was food for thought. He was seeing new places, yes, but he was also mulling to himself some new ideas.
Before I left, I hadn't given much thought, but after I'd gotten over there and met the people, when I got back, I told my friends that I felt that we should buy more from France. These folks, they need help. Put them back on their feet.
August Kohling's visit and report not only served to nourish and strengthen the affectionate link between Kansas and Lorraine, it also gave the relationship economic sense and meaning. But still, the towns felt the need for some exchange of symbols, some sign or representation by means of which they might picture one another. At least that was the substance of the letter of request which reached Morganville from Fevres. Now, happily, Morganville is the birthplace of a distinguished Kansas artist and teacher, Arvid Jacobson. Mr. Jacobson recalls for us how they came to him to suggest an exhibition of his paintings in the schoolhouse, and why.
I was asked by the committee to select the five paintings most representative of Morganville and the surrounding area. The wheat fields on the uplands, the tall cottonwoods bordering the Republican River, still water where I fished and skated as a boy many years ago.
At 10 cents a vote, Morganville picked, almost by unanimous decision, a picture of harvest time in Kansas. They sent it off, and in time their gift was answered. Lorraine came to Kansas in grooves etched on wax. In this passage from a sound recording of the pageant staged by the people of Fevre in gratitude for friendship.
People of Morganville, your voice has been heard and your gesture at the same time won for you the gratitude of the people of Fevre and showed us a new aspect of your America.
The sound of children's voices. This, my friends, is worth a thousand treaties. For this is in the spirit of him to whom we sing Hosanna at Christmas time, of him who said, "This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you." From the guiding spirit behind this Prairie Noel, from Velma Carson, a final word.
We had attempted to make ourselves equal by sharing, and then we were ready to come back to the old friendship of ideas, and we were now ready to begin that friendship we thought of that July night on the front porch.
Again, your field reporter, Elmore McKee.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. Friends, democracy, this story teaches us, is far more than the mouthing of high-flown phrases. It is a design for friendly living, for people and nations both. It is believing in it, it is the personally acting out of it. From the lips of the Reverend Joe Buckles of Morganville, we bring you these significant words.
I think most of us feel here that we've not only made a contribution to Fevre, but in a very real way, Fevre has made a contribution to us.
That same spirit of mutual tolerance and respect, so well spoken by the pastor of Morganville, Kansas, carries a lesson for every one of us Americans and for our country as a whole. For a comment on this phase of our story, I'm going to turn to some of the studies of one of America's leading research foundations, the 20th Century Fund, which is cooperating with NBC in producing these programs, and I'm going to call upon a representative of the fund, Dr. Percy W. Bidwell, who is Director of Studies for the Council on Foreign Relations and a member of the 20th Century Fund's Committee on Foreign Economic Relations.
All of us, I am sure, Mr. Grauer, feel a warm glow as we hear this story of a town in Kansas and a town in France. As I listened, I thought how wonderful it would be if all the people in the world could be linked up by pairs of communities like Fevre and Morganville. That, of course, isn't practicable. Job of organization would be too stupendous. But a great deal can be done along this line without any organization. All the world, in a way, is knit together by the processes of world trade. The day-by-day operations of businessmen, American, French, British, Indian, importers and exporters, can make possible the exchange of goods between Morganville and Fevre, as well as between New York and Paris. The only hitch is that governments seem always to be putting obstacles, tariffs, quotas, and the like, in the way of this trade.
I like to think of the cotton, tobacco, wheat, and other products of our American farms, and typewriters, automobiles, farm machinery, and all the other products of American industry being sold to people all over the earth. I like to think, especially at Christmas, that all of these American products may be making life easier in many places where it's been pretty rugged lately.
Yes, And don't forget that exports help American business, too. So often we don't stop to think, how are these people abroad going to pay for the products we like to sell to them?
You mean, Dr. Bidwell, how are they going to get the dollars to buy our goods?
That's right. The Morganville people gave their goods to the people of Fev. That can't go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about putting this on a business basis.
Well, just what is the dollar problem? It seems strange to me that if a man has some perfectly good French money, francs, let's say, he still can't buy American goods because he hasn't got dollars.
Well, the trouble is, the American sellers want to be paid in American money, in dollars. General Motors can't pay its workers in French francs. And if we in this country haven't bought French goods and paid for them in dollars, there just aren't enough dollars available in France for Frenchmen to buy American automobiles, typewriters, sewing machines, and a lot of other things.
Hmm. Wasn't that what Farmer Kohling of Morganville, Kansas, was talking about a few moments ago? You remember what he said?
But this farmer says, no, I have money enough to pay for these tracks. But I can't have them until the United States buys more goods from France. That's what my government says. We need more dollars here badly.
He put it in a nutshell. We can't sell abroad unless foreigners have dollars. And the only way they can get dollars is by selling some of their products to us.
Well, wasn't that just what Mr. Kohling, a good American from Kansas, found out when he went overseas? You recall, he said,
when I got back, I told my friends that I felt that we should buy more from France.
Mr. Kohling hit the nail on the head, and don't forget this. The very fact of his going to France, his traveling abroad, was an excellent way of helping to promote trade between that country and our own.
See, could we have that again?
Well, when Americans travel abroad, they not only have the pleasure of travel, broadening their own horizons, but the dollars they spend usually come flying right back to this country to buy American goods. One of the most pleasant ways in which we can promote world trade is to promote world travel, especially by Americans.
Dr. Bidwell, do you think that just now is a good time for us Americans to increase our imports, the goods we buy from other countries?
Best possible time, Mr. Grauer. Remember, we are just starting a huge new rearmament and defense program. That's going to place a heavy strain on our economic system. We're going to have trouble producing the vast quantities of things we need for both military and civilian purposes. The more of these goods we can get from abroad, the more we can ease the strain on our own economic system.
Imports help to keep down inflation, isn't that right?
That's right. The official report of our 20th Century Fund Committee on Foreign Economic Relations put it this way. An increase in imports under present conditions would provide our consumers with goods which they urgently need, goods which would otherwise remain scarce. It would help, therefore, to counteract inflation and to hold down the rise in living costs.
Thank you, Dr. Bidwell, for giving us some of the national and international implications of our story.
Living 1950, in conjunction with the 20th Century Fund, has presented another in our special series, The People Act. If you wish to receive a copy of today's script, or to ask questions pertaining to the possible application of the Morganville story to your own community, you are invited to write to the 20th Century Fund, 330 West 42nd Street, New York 18. We repeat that address, the 20th Century Fund, 330 West 42nd Street, New York 18. The fund will be glad to send you a script or put you in touch with an agency that may help you in your situation. Join us next week for a story from the bluegrass state of Kentucky, which we call The Sun Shines Bright. Living 1950 is produced under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Today's program was transcribed. Script was by Lou Hazem and Wade Arnold. Your narrator, Ben Grauer. Recording engineer, William Swartow. The series is directed by Edwin Dunham.
Here.
your dangerous assignment and the man called X later on NBC.